Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Coastal Liquids versus Harris County Appraisals.
May it please the court. Mr. Mark Hutchison and Mr. William Eichert will present argument for the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Hutchison will open with the first 5 minutes. Mr. Eichert will present the rebuttal.
The court, before we start, the court is pleased to note that the students from Austin Montessori School are visiting us today. Welcome to the Supreme Court.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Mark Hutchison, and together with Mr. William Eichert and Mr. William Kilgarland, we represent Coastal Liquids Transportation LP, the petitioner in this cause. This is an ad valorem tax dispute regarding Harris County Appraisal District's listing and appraisal of the storage capacity within 6 underground salt dome caverns.
It's
tax years 94 and 95.
Mr. Hutchison, you described the caverns as natural characteristics to the land.
No, Your Honor. These caverns are made out of a salt formation.
Did Coastal spend money to change the characteristic of these caverns in order to prepare them for storage?
Your Honor, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Texas Brine is the outfit that actually runs the salt domes, and brine salt. Essentially, they mine salt out of this salt dome formation and sell it for commercial purposes. As a byproduct of that, a cavity is created in the salt formation, and the walls of that cavity are salt. And because of the characteristics of salt and the thickness of those walls, it's non-permeable, and therefore it's suitable for storage of...
Was money spent to make this space that was left suitable for storing the gas? Was money spent on that? Or could you just take the salt out and say, that's it, now we can put gas in?
Absolutely. You could do that.
But did Coastal spend money in this case? Coastal did not spend money.
Texas Brine created these caverns for their brining operations.
I understand, but was money spent by Texas Brine or Coastal or somebody in order for this particular space that was created to be suitable for storing gas?
It was not created for the express purpose of creating a cavity suitable for storing gas. It was created by pumping water down into the formation, sucking out brine, and then selling the brine. That's Texas Brine's operation. The byproduct is this cavity. Certainly money was expended to do that process.
And if they hadn't done that process, then you couldn't have stored gas in
Absolutely. It would just be a salt dome formation.
Would the salt operation standing on its own be economically feasible?
Absolutely.
Texas Brine would do this, and would do this to salt domes and pump them out and clean them out, even if they were just leaving a hole in the ground.
Absolutely.
And there's no concrete spent to reline these walls or nothing of this is done.
Nothing at all.
Contrary to suggestion in the brief.
Well, what we have in the brief from the appraisal district, it says the upper portions of a constructed cavern are cemented.
What the appraisal district is talking about, if you think about it like a well.
Let me ask you.
Yes, ma'am.
Before you get there. The appraisal district cites cases from other jurisdictions that determine that wells are structures. And if that's the case, why isn't this a structure, considering that it is created like a well and it appears to have casing and many of the characteristics that wells have?
There's a difference, Your Honor, between the equipment, the casing, the machinery and equipment associated with the actual brining process, the pumping in of water, the sucking out of brine, and the hydrocarbon storage, how it gets down into the cavern.
But isn't that the same with a gas well?
Yes, but, Your Honor, in this instance, the subject property is not that machinery and equipment. That's being separately appraised under another category. Additionally, all of the liquid petroleum product in the cavern is being separately taxed under the inventory or personal property of Coastal.
The casing and the cement that's down there in that hole is being taxed as personal property.
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. It's being taxed as machinery and equipment. But it's important to understand here. We are the subject property before this court is the storage capacity, is the void within these caverns.
Okay, let me on that. Let's assume that this property is a cave, it's a void, like you say, and somebody moves in with curtains and dishwashers and washing machines and a few beds and puts a front door on it. Is that an improvement or not?
Absolutely not.
So if I go over to some land and I carve out a ditch and I cover it with soil and I have a man-made cave, and is that an improvement?
No, sir.
So people could avoid paying taxes on improvements on real estate if they just make their improvement out of the natural materials that are on the property.
Well, they wouldn't avoid paying taxes. If what they did to manipulate the land enhanced that land's value, then the land's worth more. But it doesn't make it an improvement.
But what, now, do you disagree with this characterization? This is what happened, that the construction of this hole in the ground created included engineering and design, drilling a well bore, completion of the well, solution mining and brine removal to develop the cavern, placement of casing and tubing within the cavern, cementing and installation of wellhead and pipeline equipment. And then the upper portions of the constructed cavern are cemented, and then the walls are comprised of salt. And now all that has to happen before you can store the gas.
Absolutely.
Why doesn't that transform the cavern then into a structure or a fixture?
Because the definition of improvement under the tax code, 104.3, specifically says that an improvement is a building, a structure, a fence erected on or fixed to the land.
That gets back to my original question. If other jurisdictions have interpreted an oil well to be a structure, why isn't this a structure that has similar characteristics?
And
are you saying we shouldn't follow that case law? Or
no, Your Honor. I'm saying it's completely distinguishable. Wells and the rigging and machinery equipment associated with this salt dome storage facility are absolutely separately taxable from the land. We're not arguing that. What we're arguing is the way the appraisal district did this is they figured out how many barrels of brine were taken out. And these things are valued based upon their capacity, how big they are. All of that value is associated with the land itself.
Well, let me ask you that. If we were to go your way, how would this property be taxed?
This property would be taxed as the appraisal district has taxed the property in the year 2000, which is as part of the land.
Any other questions? Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
May it please the court, that just displays the peril of splitting your argument, because I'm Bill Eichert, and it's good morning to you, and I was going to be speaking about the listing and appraisal of the storage capacity in these salt domes.
Mr. Eichert, is what did the Court of Appeals decision in this case substantially change the way taxing entities around the state of Texas have traditionally handled appraising these kinds of properties?
Absolutely not.
So all these amicus briefs that we have up here that say that all the school districts and counties have been taxing these things as an improvement are wrong? That hasn't been the usual practice in Texas?
Justice Hankson, when this property that's the subject of this litigation was first placed on the appraisal roll in Harris County in 1994, it was placed on the appraisal roll as business inventory. So to suggest that these have been appraised been listed on the roll as improvements everywhere is just not correct.
But I just want you to respond to this whole big stack of amicus briefs that we have here that says that if we allow the Court of Appeals decision to stand in this particular case, that we will have substantially changed the practice of taxing entities throughout the state of Texas, and that we're going to be faced with this huge amount of taxpayer activity to recoup taxes that have been paid. Do you disagree with the amicus briefs, or do they correctly state the condition of things around the state with respect to this issue?
There are certainly taxing jurisdictions, appraisal districts, that have listed storage capacity in sawdung caverns as improvements. There are also appraisal districts, Your Honor, in Texas that have listed them as land. There are also appraisal districts in the state that have listed them as I said, in Harris County listed them in the first instance in this case, as personal property, as business inventory. That's one of the reasons why we're here believe it's a question of law that needs to be disposed of.
I really want to know the impact of this decision, and so I take it by your answer then that you disagree with all the amici.
What I agree with is, number one, that prospectively this will have absolutely, I mean, we don't know what the impact is going to have prospectively, but certainly these caverns and the storage capacity in them will not escape taxation. That Chicken Little mentality just doesn't exist. The sky's not going to fall, because whether they're listed on the appraisal roll as an improvement or they're listed on the appraisal roll as land, as we contend, they're still going, the value of them is still going to be subjected to property tax.
Well, if the value of them is attached to the land, then isn't the landowner the one who's going to be paying all these taxes as opposed to the person who's leasing it? And let me follow that with another question. These caverns are often sold rather than leased. What if you had bought this cavern? Would it still be taxed with the land?
What is being sold or leased, Justice O'Neill, is the storage capacity within the cavern. It's the void. And we think that that is a part of the land, but it can be separately, it can be transferred, and in this case, for instance, Coastal leases it from, and has actually acquired it from Texas Brine. So,
what if you had bought it?
In this case, we would contend that the proper taxpayer would be the surface owner.
Even if you had bought it?
Even if we bought it. On the other hand, in every instance that I'm aware of, and certainly within the record in this case, the ultimate user of the property is contractually obligated to reimburse the surface owner for the taxes involved.
That includes the Methodist Church.
Yes.
The other, so.
So, I mean, all that's taken care of contractually in virtually everything. It's like a lease. It's like a tenant in a building having taxes, ad valorem taxes, as an expense pass.
Then let me ask you a question. Why are we even here?
Why do you care?
Why are we here?
Because there needs to be.
Let me predicate the question. I'm sorry. I understood from Mr. Hutchison that if you created a cavern, you made it into a home, that would enhance the value of the real estate. The taxes would be reflected in the real estate the service owner pays. Now, you've just argued that under the contract, if that circumstance occurred, then you'd be responsible for paying for it. And if that's the case, then what difference does it make whether we say this is an improvement that's separately taxed, or it's not an improvement that's not separately taxed, but it can be factored into the enhancement and the value of the real estate, and so there's going to be taxed?
I believe it is profoundly important, and there needs to be a bright line drawn with respect to into which category any real property asset subject to taxation in this state be placed. And the reason for that is exactly as was discussed by this court in Gifford Hill, is the appraisal district in that case said, well, it doesn't matter what limestone rock is. It can be a mineral, it can be a minor quarry, it can be land. It doesn't matter how we list it. But writing for the court, Justice Hightower clearly pointed out that there are three reasons, really, why you need to figure out which category it fits. One is to avoid multiple appraisal, which is exactly what happened. We contend exactly what happened in this case. Number two, it is to make sure that property doesn't escape taxation, which was the case in the Credit Bank opinion that we cited, and in the Walker opinion, and we cited where there was real estate was the category, and the property owner attempted to argue that his improvements, which were left off, were subsumed within the real estate category. Court said no, real improvements are separate. And thirdly, to determine the appropriate appraisal methodology to be employed with respect to that property. For instance, in Gifford Hill, limestone rock, if it's producing and inside a mine or quarry, is appraised by the income approach. If it's not producing and it's outside the mine, it's part of the land, and it's appraised by the comparative sales analysis. And in that case, there was a difference between $800 an acre for land in Wise County containing limestone rock versus $7.5 million for the minor quarry if the same rock were included within it.
Let's go on the quarry of the rock. If I understand the argument that's being made, though, if I carve out my living quarters from the limestone wall, then that's not an improvement to the property. Then my question is, well, if I just, instead of carving it out of the wall, I just break the wall into separate pieces and go build me a wall out of that same limestone, how have we now defined a line that creates that as an improvement? The Austin Stone homes that surround this town are just made out of the natural materials that are appearing. Where would your line draw on how come that's an improvement, but if I just carved it out of a limestone wall, that wouldn't be an improvement?
Well, I'm not as quick to answer that question as my colleague, Mr. Hutchison, is. I think there could be situations which I can envision where sculpting out a residence from a limestone rock face could be considered an improvement.
And then where's that line then?
I think the line would be, what you install there. For instance, if all you do is dig a hole in the wall and nothing else, then I think that's not an improvement. But
suppose you carve out three walls, but you just put on one wall, a door over the front.
I think it's getting closer. And I think if you put electric wiring in it, it's getting even closer. And if you start furnishing it with appliances, it's getting closer. In response to your question, let me just give you the best analogy I know. Suppose we're in Alaska and a meatpacking firm decides it needs some additional space to store its meat. And so there's a glacier in the back lot. And it goes out and injects hot water into the center of the glacier and creates a cavity. And then it goes out and it stores the meat in the cavity in the glacier until such time as demand requires the meat's usage. Well, under the theory that the appraisal district has espoused in this case, that cavity in the glacier would be considered an improvement. And it would be put on the appraisal records as the most valuable and the largest commercial freezer in the United States. I say that melted cavity in the middle of a glacier is not an improvement.
But if you put a door on it so you have access to and from, does that make it closer?
No, because the door is in our case, the injection and ejection wells, which I think Judge Hankinson was getting at and Judge Gonzalez earlier, are taxed separately. The machinery and equipment and the piping and the building on the premises that are used to facilitate the storage of this product are listed separately on the appraisal rolls as machinery and equipment and improvements.
I'm a little bit confused, and I hope you can help me understand this better. Obviously, if the cavern is considered part of the real property, then there is a particular appraisal method that is applied and taking into account the fact that there's a cavern on the real property, or is it not taken into account?
If the appraisal of the real property, you mean the surface, land?
If this cavern is not an improvement,
right.
In fact, it's considered part of the real property. How does under the applicable appraisal method, how does the existence of the cavern affect the value of the real property, or does it at all?
Oh, yeah, it does. And
okay.
In fact,
how does that figure in?
Well, we have actually there have been numerous appraisals in this very case, it is possible to go out and appraise property. In fact, we've done it where it is assumed that the cavern, that the storage capacity within the salt dome is a part of the land. And you can actually see that land transactions occur, which in the land includes caverns for this purpose. And so the value is enhanced substantially.
Okay, all right. But my point, which I think goes back to an earlier question, the cavern enhances the value of the real property. But apparently it does not enhance the value of the real property as much as the total value that would be attached to treating it as an improvement in valuing it and then valuing the real property.
Well, we don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor, because in this case, for instance, originally the appraisal district put the storage capacity on at $10 million. It is, you know, there was an appraisal which is attached to their papers that was presented by our people at the original ARB hearing, which showed it was worth $2 million. We now have appraisals to show that it's worth about $600,000. And the issue of how much this value enhancement is yet to be determined.
Well, but that's my whole point. Does it really make any difference? Or when you use the separate appraisal methods, do you end up at the same point because you are, in fact, considering the actual value of having the storage capacity and the ability and the economic value associated with it? Or is there going to be a net difference to your client in terms of how much tax is paid and to the taxing jurisdiction in terms of how much tax they receive?
Well, you know, the answer is we don't know. That I think that's the only answer I can give you. I think, though, you're going back, Your Honor, to a question of whether or not there's going to be lost revenue as a result of this. And frankly, I don't think that's an issue that's relevant to the disposition of this case. Obviously, in our court systems, we instruct our jurors not to take into consideration the economic impact of their decisions, and I don't think this court should do that either. But I don't know the answer. I don't think anybody knows, because so far, not one of these cases involving salt domes has reached the merits where the value of the salt dome, whether it's an improvement or whether it's subsumed within the value of the land, has been determined.
My reason for asking the question is I want to know why you all are so fighting so hard over this if you don't think it really makes any difference.
Because...
And I guess I'm not understanding...
Well, let me ask you this. Okay. Maybe it's asking the same question another way. It makes a big difference.
Let's just maybe take it. Questions should come first.
Okay.
Well, I just want to know what you're fighting over then. Well, I'm trying to understand the impact of the issue in this case.
That we're fighting over two issues. One is that as tax lawyers, we and our client as a corporate citizen believe that there is a fundamental legal right to have your real property categorized properly for two reasons. One, so the proper appraisal methodology will be employed, and two, so that you will not be put in jeopardy of multiple appraisal. We believe that as a matter of law, the storage capacity in these salt domes in the Alameda facility was appraised twice for property tax purposes.
Well, can you explain that?
Well, as we have stated in our briefs, Your Honor, if you conclude as a matter of law that this property, this real property is not an improvement, but it's merely a characteristic of the land, then if you conclude that as a matter of law, which we think you must, and two, you agree with us that the Harris County Appraisal District appraised, as it's required to do, appraised that subject property at its fair market value, then, if this property is also listed separately as an improvement, then that constitutes multiple appraisal as a matter of law. It's just axiomatic.
Mr. Eichert.
Okay. Going back to the hypothetical,
let Judge O'Neill go. She thought she had a question that
My question played off of the prior question in terms of what difference it makes. It does make a very real difference, doesn't it, in terms of being able to accurately appraise. Because under your analysis, you would have to use a comparable sales approach, which is almost impossible to do in a salt mine situation, as opposed to appraising it as you would an overground storage tank or an underground storage tank, which this would seem to have more similar characteristics with, which would be a more income approach.
Well, I disagree with your initial premise. I mean, it is not difficult to appraise salt dome formations which have storage capacity within them by the comparable sales method. We have commissioned and obtained several appraisals with respect to this very property, and several with respect to other properties that are subject to the pending dispute. So it is not difficult. It is done routinely. But the underlying, the concept that you're getting at, the correct one, is that one of the reasons why it's important and why we're fighting to have the proper 1042 category utilized is because that in part dictates the appraisal methodology. That's exactly what Justice Hightower said in Gifford Hill.
Going back to your hypothetical real quick, the property owner in Alaska, if that property owner spent millions of dollars to enhance the capacity of this cavern to freeze meat, would that constitute improvement?
No. No, Your Honor, it wouldn't. It may enhance the value of the land however much money was invested in it, but it's still land. An improvement, I mean, we were shown all sorts of there was a semantics issue involved in the briefing in this case where the definition of improvement under 104.3 of the code was dissected, and each individual word was definitions were used, but we just think this is common sense. I mean, this is in effect the subject property in this case is nothing. It's just a void.
Help me understand how this progressed. When this was a salt dome, I assume that the minerals were taxed separately from the surface estate.
The salt is appraised as land. It's not appraised as a mineral in place. It is under the sections here, the salt is listed as land. It's not listed as a mineral in place, or it's not listed as a minor quarry for tax purposes. That's one of my biggest points that we raised in our briefs, is that how can the void be an improvement, but the salt walls be land? We think it's fundamentally inconsistent.
Well, you characterized this void as a nothing, and yet you were willing to spend, I think it said, $3 million to this void so you could use it. You don't consider that an enhancement any way?
No, sir, and I don't. It's a very interesting question, Justice Baker, because it puts it directs the focus on, from an appraisal standpoint, what you're looking at. In Texas, the value of property for property tax purposes is determined by value in exchange. It's what a willing buyer would give to a willing seller, as everybody on the court knows. There's also another value standard, which is called the value in use, which is the value intrinsic to the owner of the property as if it were to be continued to be used the way it is. And obviously, the value in use is much greater in this case. The value to Coastal is much greater than it would be to me. I mean, I can't use this as a storage facility. It has no value to me at all.
Well, so, even if you were the owner of the salt dome before Coastal came along, the fact that Coastal wants it enhances the value for use to you as the owner, even though you don't have any intention of storing any materials.
Well, that's true, and that would reflect, presumably, there would be a universe of potential buyers out there who would have a capability of using it, and it would be able to obtain the permits necessary to utilize it. who would create demand for this property, which would enhance the value of land under which the salt dome exists.
Any other questions?
Let me just quick follow up on an early question I had. If you had bought this cavern instead of leased it, I'm not sure I understood your answer to my last question. You're saying it would still be taxed to the surface owner, even though you owned it?
It is our contention that it would be taxed to the I misunderstood your question, Justice Neal, and I apologize for that. The owner of the property would be ultimately liable for the taxes on it, but it would still be land. It would just be a part of the land which has been severed from the surface.
So you would pay the taxes on it, and you would seek reimbursement from the landowner?
Well, perhaps not. That would have to be determined by contract between us. It would not be within the province of the taxing authorities to make that
decision. But, I mean, if you just bought it outright, I'm going to pay you X amount of money for these salt dumps, and there was nothing else said about it, how would that work?
Well, if Coastal goes and says, I'm going to purchase the storage capacity within this cavern, then it would be the taxpayer. At the end of the day, on January 1st, the value of that storage capacity would be placed on the appraisal roll in the name of Coastal Liquids Transmission LP as land, and it would be valued accordingly. That's how we believe it should be valued.
That's my basic question. Can you can sever the surface from the salt dome?
Yes.
And you can sell them and own them separately?
Yes.
And so why can't they be taxed separately?
Well, because if they're not sold, they can be taxed because an improvement is a separate entity of real property that has value in and of itself.
It can be taxed.
It may be taxed
as real property, but you can sever the surface from the dome.
Right. The important difference here is that the value of the land is, say, using a pie, is 100. There's 100% value to the unsevered land. Okay, all of the characteristics that contribute to the value of the land constitute 100% of its value. If you sever a portion of that and cut it out in the form of this storage capacity, part of that value will now be assigned to Coastal for the purposes of determining property tax value, but the 100% of the value of that land has to set the upper limit of the value of the whole. And so, but if the land account is here and the improvement account is over here, then you can have the land account at one, setting one upper limit, and then the improvement can have no upper limit to its value whatsoever.
I'm not sure I understand this. When a salt dome is being mined, let's suppose there's a surface owner who owns the surface and somebody else owns the salt underneath it's being mined.
Yes.
How is the minerals that are being, the salt, when it's being mined, is that taxed as a mineral or is that taxed as, how is that?
It's the salt deposit that is unproduced, that hasn't been removed from the land, from the ground yet, is land.
As it's being, it's, there
and
is
then
an
as it is dissolved and ejected from the dome in the form of brine, it is taxed as business personal property. It's inventory.
So
it's removed from the land, it's inventory.
It's taxed as land as opposed to a mineral.
Yes, ma'am.
Any other questions? Thank you, Councilman. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court. Mr. Mario Deloso will present argument for the respondent.
Mr. Deloso, there's been a lot of questions about whether it's an improvement or not an improvement, but you've raised a question in your briefs about the authority of Coastal to even be in court. It is not clear for me in the briefing. Why do you segregate the 1994 decision taxes and the 1995 decision taxes? It is not. What do you claim was wrong with their registration as a foreign corporation? And did you make that complaint to both they're suing over the 1994 taxes and the 1995 taxes, or just one?
Yes, Your Honor. I complained, the appraisal district complained about it on both years. There was a verified pleading which alleged that Coastal was not registered in Texas with the Secretary of State, and it stated for 1994 and 1995. That claim, that allegation, was carried forward through all the briefing and the trial court on up to the Court of Appeals.
And who has the burden to establish whether or not they were registered?
The appraisal district, Your Honor.
Pardon?
The appraisal district would, Your Honor.
If the record is unclear as to whether or not they had properly registered in 95, would the district lose on that complaint as to 95?
Not under the record as it exists in this case, Your Honor. I think it's perfectly clear that it was alleged from day one that they were not registered with the Secretary of State until 1995 in compliance with the Limited Partnership Act, Section 907A. And the contents of that act make it clear they have to meet all the requirements of it.
Which includes paying all the fees.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
I guess I'll start, Your Honor, with trying to answer a few of the questions that were raised by counsel. There was a statement made that the record reflects, if you will, that the surface owners are going to be reimbursed for taxes. That's an important point. I can't leave that alone because the record does not reflect that. There is nothing in the record about that. In this case, what the record does reflect is that the surface land, at least as to three of the four tracts which overlie the caverns, are severed. Those three tracts are severed. The appraisal district simply cannot appraise as a characteristic of those three owners' land these caverns. These are valuable improvements under any definition that's applicable.
Does the Court of Appeals decision in this case, as the amici urged, represent a departure from the practice of taxing jurisdictions around the state of Texas with respect to salt domes?
Your Honor, the record doesn't reflect the...
I understand, but the amici have brought that issue to our attention. I just want to know if that's your view, that we're looking at a substantial change in the way taxing jurisdictions handle this kind of an issue if the Court of Appeals decision is allowed to stand.
Yes. Not just on this kind of property, Your Honor. That's a real problem with this decision and this case. It allows multiple appraisal to be established based on bald assertions. If there was a multiple appraisal in this case, it would have been a simple matter to point that out.
Well, you did tax the land.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, and if their position is right that this should have been included in it, presumably you didn't include it.
No, we didn't. There's no evidence in the record, Your Honor, that there was any listing and appraisal of the storage cabinet.
Do you tax it as land now?
That's not on the record, Your Honor. If you'd like an answer?
Well, no.
I'll answer.
A lot of questions to horse the record.
Well, I think I can say this legitimately. Obviously, with the decision at hand, the appraisal district has been steered in a particular direction. They have no choice. They'll get some relief from this court, Your Honor. Okay.
What difference does it make, as long as you can tax both, address the questions that we asked opposing counsel here, what difference does it make to the appraisal district whether you tax it as an improvement or as land?
Well, Your Honor,
other than you want to do it one way or the other.
It makes a substantial difference in this case at hand, for example, just to use it, case on point. The land is severed from the caverns. So the district is not at liberty, again, to tax those caverns as a characteristic of these other three landowners' property.
Well, you can tax separately as land, surface ownership and mineral ownership. Whether that's severable or not doesn't have anything to do with whether you tax it as an improvement or as land, does it? You can tax separated property ownership as land, both as land. So what's severance got to do with it?
Severance has to do with, in any case, any property of this type or similar property can be analyzed and analogized to it in any way, the appraisal district could not tax.
You tax minerals as land?
Yes.
Even when they're severed from the surface?
Right.
Why couldn't you tax these salt domes as land even when they're severed from the surface?
Tax them as land.
tax them as a mineral interest, as real property, even though they're separated, the interest is separated from the surface. Why aren't they still real property for tax purposes, severed or not?
Well, these caverns are substantially improved to the extent that they are improved.
That begs the question, why couldn't you tax them as real property for whatever their value is?
Your Honor, I don't believe under the state of facts in this case that the appraisal district is at liberty to decide that those should be taxed to the land and not listed as improvements. Furthermore, it's a real quandary. Here you are faced with a case that alleges a multiple appraisal that the appraisal district says didn't occur, whereas if you had land in the same account even, land and improvements, obviously there wouldn't be any question that there was no multiple appraisal. So we would want to put improvements, in this case, structures of this type, into a separate category of improvements.
But as long as you're taxing the overall value, what difference does it make to you which category you put it in, as long as the value is captured?
I'd have to answer that I believe if the argument could be made against the district, the argument could be made against the district that we had to break them out of improvements, that we could lump them in with land, that they couldn't be appraised as part of the land. There was a statement made, for example, to illustrate that point, that there's appraisals in the record that indicate that these caverns have been assumed to be land or were appraised as land, and that is not correct. There's three appraisals in the record that each of them appraised these caverns separately.
How are they appraised in condemnation proceedings?
I can't answer that, Your Honor.
If we say these structures have to be appraised as land from this day forward, are you going to be able to do that?
Your Honor, I would imagine we would have to do that, yes.
Will it make any difference to you whether there's land or improvements from the standpoint of whether you're going to get the revenue?
Not from a revenue standpoint, that's not what this is about, but if you have a circumstance that you have here again where there is a severance between the cavern and the surface, then it's hard to visualize how the district could appraise those as land.
Let me ask you, on just this land that exists out there, you have this raw land out there, and do you, apart from minerals, which you're allowed to tax anyway, would you be able to tax, assuming there wasn't a severance of this salt dome, would you be able to tax the surface owner for what geological formations exist below the surface that are not minerals in place? Could you tax them for limestone or shale or gumbo or something that exists under them, because there might be a commercial market for that if they ever decided to open it up as a mine?
No, Your Honor, I believe that question has been answered by Gifford Hill, where it's held that limestone is part of the land. But in that case, this court...
Well, when you say it's part of the land, that's my question. If it's part of the land, does that mean that you can look at a comparable vacant land out there and then add a factor to the value of that land because it also has some sort of shale or some sort of geologic formation underneath it that might have some commercial value? You say, well, you can tax it as part of the land, but I'm trying to understand how you appraise land. Can you add a factor that includes a geological formation underneath the land?
If it's taxable under the tax code.
Well, this says minerals in place is taxable.
Yes.
It says a mine or a quarry is taxable.
Right.
Then it says land. And
right.
So I'm saying it's not any of the other categories there that you're permitted to tax. It's just land. Could you, in appraising the value of the land, take into consideration geologic formations that exist under there that's not otherwise one of these things that's listed that you could tax?
If it were allowed under, say, Section 23.175 of the code, say, as a mineral, of course that's on the list, but yes, we could value those things at the tax code, and this statute would allow us to tax, but no, we wouldn't add up all different components of what might lie under there otherwise and then value that as land.
But don't they yield a different figure in terms of taxes? If you tax them as land, it's going to yield a lower value on a comparable sales approach as opposed to if you value them as an improvement, doesn't that look more at what income the property produces? And isn't that what we're fighting over here? I mean, if the appraisal is going to be the same under either method, I agree. I'm not sure I know what we're fussing about.
There'll be three different ways to appraise it, but all the evidence in this case shows that how these caverns are appraised is separate. Now, whether you value the land, an appraiser does, and then values the caverns, whether it's on the cost, the market, or the income approach, and then adds those two together, you still appraise the caverns separately.
Won't there be different tax rates if the surface is subject to various exemptions? And you're having to pay. The appraisal number may be the same, but might the rate not be different?
No, it wouldn't be different on the different categories of property. No, Your Honor. Okay. So, in fact, the case, El Paso case, is cited El Paso Central Appraisal District versus Montrose Partners, has a quote in it that talks about that. It says it's not the appraised value that's an issue; it's the item, the underlying item that's being taxed.
But if the underlying item is a cavern and it's worth $500,000, let's say, then any type of surface exemption you're getting, whether that's wildlife management or agriculture or something like that, that's not going to apply to that $500,000 taxed at whatever rate a big company that might be operating that underground.
Well, if they're separate, no, it would not apply. If they're treated as an improvement, that is, in the Gifford Hill case before this court, heard by this court, the agricultural exemption did apply to everything that was under the land, except that part that was in the quarry. So this decision out of the First Court of Appeal leaves us to argue that in the future, how that's going to relate to agricultural exemptions, and how it will relate to that exemption as to any profile, if you will, of that cavern that's under the land.
Let me go back to my question about the capacity to bring this protest, I guess, to get into court. Coastal argues that they have the authority as an agent or a lessee under a later statute from 1995 to come into court to handle this appraisal dispute.
Is the item, the underlying item that's being taxed.
But if the underlying item is a cavern and it's worth $500,000, let's say, then any type of surface exemption you're getting, whether that's wildlife management or agriculture or something like that, that's not going to apply to that $500,000 taxed at whatever rate a big company that might be operating that underground.
Well, if they're separate, no, it would not apply. If they're treated as an improvement, that is, in the Gifford Hill case before this court, heard by this court, in the Gifford Hill case, the agricultural exemption did apply to everything that was under the land, except that part that was in the quarry. So this decision out of the First Court of Appeal leaves us to argue that in the future, how that's going to relate to agricultural exemptions, and how it will relate to that exemption as to any profile, if you will, of that cavern that's under the land.
Let me go back to my question about the capacity to bring this protest, I guess, to get into court. Coastal argues that they have the authority as an agent or a lessee under a later statute from 1995 to come into court to handle this appraisal dispute. And they argue that that is a more specific statute than a statute that requires them to register as a limited partnership to come into court. How do you respond to that argument?
Your Honor, I disagree that they make that specific argument, but I'll answer the question as follows. The prohibition against maintaining an action suit or proceeding in Texas would apply to any statutory or other cause of action. It doesn't exclude code provisions, this code or any other code.
But if there's a separate deal that says that a lessee of this property could, I guess, protest the taxes that are assessed against that property, you're saying that does not give the lessee the authority to come into court in the face of another statute. If the lessee happens to be a limited partner, that they have to be registered.
Limited partnerships don't enjoy any greater rights than anyone else who has a right under any other code or statute. That's my point. And if it's, in this case, a limited partnership is prohibited under 907A from maintaining an action suit or proceeding in Texas until it is properly registered. If I may, there was a question asked earlier about our point made, and questions asked about the improvements and how they've been viewed in other states. There was a case that I missed in preparing the briefs, but came upon in the preparation of the oral argument, and it's Enterprise Products Company versus the Board of Supervisors of the Forest County, Mississippi, and the Peddle School District. In that case, the Mississippi Supreme Court, referencing an AG's opinion in that state, addressed caverns just such as these as improvements under their code that are separately taxable from land.
Do you have a citation for that, please?
729 Southern 2nd, 790. And the AG's opinion that I mentioned is 930328. Your Honor, the appraisal district contends that under the definition of improvements, that these fit clearly within the definition of structure. Of course, the definition of improvements is a building structure, a fixture, fence, erected on or affixed to land. Because these are man-made structures, they are improvements under the plain meaning, common usage of those terms.
At what point does something like this become a structure? What would someone like Coastal have to do or spend in order to make something that's natural into a structure? I mean, could mere use turn something natural into a structure?
Use possibly. That'd be a harder one to imagine. In this case, there were substantial amounts of money as reflected in the Railroad Commission records during the record and in the appraisals that reflect there was a substantial amount of money and substantial improvement to the property in the form of the cement in the upper portions of the caverns. I believe in the Railroad Commission records at about page clerk's record 393, where it depicts some of the caverns in the upper portions being cemented. They're sealed off, a wellhead's put on, they're connected to pipelines, and they're designed and engineered structures. So you get away from, you know, whether it's just used for something. For example, a hole in the ground that might be used to store something, you can walk over and drop a rock in it. That's not the case here at all.
But how does a county determine whether or not something becomes a structure and thereby an improvement? I mean, what would Coastal have to do to make it? What is the minimum amount of money spent or activity by Coastal that would turn this natural characteristic of the land into a structure?
Well, the definition of structure at the point that they had joined together parts to outfit whatever this thing we're talking about is for a particular use and to give it that utility. It's the act of putting the parts together, joining the component parts together, that make
it
a structure.
So one part, they attach some little thing to this natural characteristic, and that would then transform this natural thing into an improvement because it's a structure now.
One point might not, Your Honor. I wouldn't argue that.
What is the economic impact of the Court of Appeals decision in this case?
Your Honor, you've alluded to...
We've kind of asked it in several different forms, and I don't think I still figured out yet why it makes much difference and whether or not it means that less taxes will be collected in substantial amounts, whether property will escape valuation. I'm not really sure. What is the economic impact of the Court of Appeals decision in this case?
Well, you've alluded to the matters before you there in those other briefs, but what, as far as whether it's in one place or another place, they should be substantially the same numbers.
Then why do we have all these amici saying that the world's going to come to an end if we let the Court of Appeals decision stand?
Well,
and that all this property is going to escape taxation.
Without addressing the amici, what this case stands for is propositions on bald assertions of multiple appraisal. We have no other case in Texas that has ever allowed that to happen, where there was just a bald assertion that multiple appraisal has occurred. Persons can now come in and argue descriptions and what's been added or use or a variety of things that your questions are touched on today and say, just because of this misdescription, we now have a multiple appraisal. So from that standpoint, again, I don't feel comfortable going into the amici. From that standpoint alone, the prohibition, if you will, by the opinion of the appraisal district appraising what can be legitimately characterized as improvements, it could be huge. not to mention what it would do in terms of litigation,
so
or will do in terms of litigation.
So you don't care so much whether it's taxed as an improvement or as land, as long as it's not considered a multiple appraisal?
Well, I was addressing the circumstance where people do come in and address it as a multiple appraisal, and what that leads to...
Well, but is the answer then yes? I mean, you don't really... It doesn't matter to the appraisal district whether it's characterized as improvement or land, just as long as, in this instance, we don't call it a multiple appraisal. You don't really care.
No, we really do care.
Why?
Well, notwithstanding the question, the fact that it's been severed, we are constrained and cannot appraise as a characteristic of the land these caverns of someone who don't own them. That could happen other places in the state as well as here.
But going back to Owen's question, why can't you? Just because it's been severed, like minerals, severed from the surface, why can't you tax them as land just because they've been severed?
You're suggesting we would have two land accounts, one going to party A, one going to party B?
I don't know. Is that why? Because administrative burden? Or I mean, you said you can't do it.
Well, I can obviously see that there would be an argument there that you can't appraise land twice. I mean, that's the argument to be made, and I think, in that fact situation.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Mr. Eichert, earlier in response to one of my questions, you said that we should not concern ourselves with economic impact. And I just want to ask you one more time, do you want to stand on that or do you want to talk to us about that?
Well, I'd like to stand on it, but I won't.
Okay.
with respect, first of all, I think that Mr. Dolasso gave the correct answer when he said prospectively that there probably won't be any revenue impact. The question that is raised by the MEC is whether or not folks who are the owners or operators of similar properties located in other jurisdictions, which have been properties which have been listed as improvements, will attempt through what's known as a Section 2525C3 motion, attempt to go back in time 4 or 5 years, depending on how you interpret the statute, to argue that there was multiple appraisal, because that's one of the three conditions under 2525C3 that allows you to go back to correct the appraisal roll after the statutory period. So in the event those folks are successful, let's assume that you determine this is land. The MEC are saying that the floodgates will open and there will be hundreds of these salt dam operators who will file 2525C3 motions, and then there will be a concomitant reduction in the tax base by however many zillions of dollars they postulated in their briefs, which of course isn't in the record, and there's nothing to substantiate any of those dollar amounts they quoted. But it's our position that, sure, if there was multiple appraisal, it's illegal, and there shouldn't have been. And they would have to, that unlawful conduct on the part of the appraisal districts would have to be redressed. And if that means that there is a result for that five-year window in a diminution in the tax base, so be it. I mean, but I don't know what the result's going to be. They're going to have to take the step. You're going to have to determine it's land. They're going to have to take the step of filing a 2525C3 motion. The appraisal review board is going to have to deny that. It's going to have to go up to the courts, and then there's going to have to be a determination of whether there was, in fact, multiple appraisal, which there may not have been as a matter of law.
You said multiple appraisal, but isn't really the question is whether they put it, if they put it in a category of improvement and therefore put most of the value in the improvement category as opposed to the land value, and improvement, we say, no, it's not improvement, they can't go back and then reevaluate retrospectively and put the value back in the land category. Isn't that what really happened?
Well, not really. It's close, that Justice Owens. I mean, what this amounts to is if you need to assume that the value of the land in its totality, with no interest severed from it, is X, okay? And then if if a portion of that land, a characteristic of that land, is separated out and called something else, an improvement in this case, and it's valued Y, then and there is not a simultaneous adjustment in the value of the land account downward to reflect the taking out of the other piece of the property. That is, if the land account stays the same, but there's another account that is associated with the value of the other asset, then that asset's been appraised twice.
Yeah, but we don't know one way or the other. I think what the MS you're complaining about is they may have put most of the value in the improvement category as opposed to the land category.
But that's for the MISI to figure out. I mean, if you're talking about those other cases that Justice Hankinson was talking about, that's to be determined on a case-by-case basis as they arise. In this case, we're saying, I mean, we know, as a matter of fact, and it is in the record, Justice Owen, that the land account in 1999, that these salt storage facilities were not listed separately on the appraisal roll in 1993. They were in operation from 1981 through 93, but they weren't separately listed. In 94, and the value of the land account in 1993 was X amount of dollars. In 1994, all of a sudden these salt dome storage facilities appeared on the appraisal roll at a value of $10 million. The land account in 1994 stayed the same. It didn't change from 1993.
Okay, Mr. Eichardt, I have a question. I would like you to, for the 1994 appraisal, you argue that you were designated as the agent in the lease to represent Brian in the tax protest, and you come up here. And to that, the appraisal district has argued because you're not registered as a limited partnership, you cannot come into court to do that. And I've not seen, you've not really had an opportunity to talk about that, but if the court concludes that even the designation in the lease agreement, whether it was filed timely or not filed timely, as I understand this, what gives you the authority to come into court when in 1994 you weren't registered as a limited partnership or Coastal was not?
But Justice Enoch, I'll do the best I can to answer that question. As I started to say at the outset, that's the peril of dividing the argument. My associate, Mr. Hutchinson, was supposed to talk about all those issues concerning standing, and I don't think he addressed 1 minute's worth of it. But in short form, to specifically answer your question, is that that Section 9.07B of the Texas Revised Limited Partnership Act states that that the failure to register does not impair defense. So our position is that because
we have 4209,
but it's a defense. It does not impair your defense in court.
Correct.
But and you filed the lawsuit.
That's correct. And
so we have to win on that point, essentially, I'll truncate it, you have to overturn the decision in 94. You have to win on the point that this really is a defensive posture that you're in and that you ought to be allowed to appear.
Yes, Your Honor.
And for 1995, you registered, or Coastal registered, midway in 1995, but the record is unclear as to whether they paid all the fees necessary. So for 1995, to maintain against their complaint, their challenge, to maintain that judgment, the court still has to also conclude that this was a defensive posture.
That's correct. Okay. Chief Justice Phillips, may I ask one? I realize my time's up, but there was a case that was brought to our attention for the first time today, this Enterprise Products case out of Mississippi. May we have an opportunity to review that case and submit
yes.
some post-submission?
Yes, there's some post-submission brief.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Anything else? Thank you, counsel. That concludes today's arguments, all of which are submitted to the court on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will now adjourn the court.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, now stands adjourned.